A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been thinking about sloths, which I obviously appreciate. He points out that most people picture Costa Rica when they think of wild sloths, but by his rough estimation, there are actually more sloths in Brazil. Which makes sense, given Costa Rica is tiny. He wants to know which country sloths actually live in, whether I have family across Latin America, and the big question, are the two-toed and three-toed varieties found in different places? There's a lot more to unpack than the postcard version.
There really is, and the postcard version is almost entirely Costa Rican. The sloth hanging in a Manuel Antonio tree, hibiscus flower, the whole calendar spread. But if you had to bet on which country has the most sloths, you'd probably lose money. Brazil holds the crown by an order of magnitude, and the reasons are a masterclass in how habitat scale beats density every time.
Of course they are. My Brazilian cousins, numerous, sprawling, hard to get a family reunion organized. So let's start with the map. Where exactly do sloths live, and why does the answer surprise most people?
Wild sloths are found across 15 countries: Brazil, Costa Rica, Panama, Colombia, Venezuela, Ecuador, Peru, Bolivia, Guyana, Suriname, French Guiana, Nicaragua, Honduras, and Trinidad and Tobago. But the big four that matter for any population discussion are Brazil, Costa Rica, Colombia, and Panama. Everything else is either smaller populations or range edges.
I didn't realize Nicaragua and Honduras still had them.
They do. But the populations are thin and fragmented. Nicaragua's Caribbean lowlands still have brown-throated three-toed sloths and Hoffman's two-toed sloths, but deforestation on the Pacific side has essentially wiped them out there. Honduras is similar. They're present in the Mosquitia region, but good luck finding reliable population estimates.
The northern edge of the range is basically Honduras, and then it stretches all the way down through the Amazon basin.
And the southern limit is roughly northern Argentina and Paraguay, though neither country has established breeding populations, just occasional dispersing individuals crossing the border from Bolivia and Brazil. The core range is the Amazon basin plus the Atlantic forest of coastal Brazil, and then the Central American isthmus up to Honduras.
Before we get into the numbers game, let's set up the two-toed versus three-toed split, because I think that's where most people's understanding gets blurry.
And this is one of the biggest misconceptions out there. Two-toed and three-toed sloths are not the same animal with different toe counts. They diverged roughly 40 million years ago. They're in completely different families. Megalonychidae for the two-toed genus Cholepus, and Bradypodidae for the three-toed genus Bradypus. Different diets, different metabolisms, different elevational tolerances, different everything.
40 million years. So, a sloth and another sloth can be about as closely related as a donkey and a tapir.
And within each genus, there are multiple species. Bradypus has four recognized species: the brown-throated three-toed, the pale-throated three-toed, the maned three-toed, and the pygmy three-toed. Cholepus has two, Linnaeus's two-toed, and Hoffman's two-toed. So six species total, split across two genera that overlap in many regions but have very different habitat preferences.
This is going to matter enormously when we talk about why certain countries have certain sloths and not others. But let's start with the headline number. Brazil versus Costa Rica. What are we actually talking about?
Brazil's wild sloth population is estimated at 100,000 to 150,000 individuals across the Amazon and the Atlantic forest. Costa Rica's is roughly 5,000 to 10,000. So Brazil has 10 to 15 times more sloths, maybe more.
Yet Costa Rica is sloth brand central. The t-shirts, the stuffed animals, the ecotourism brochures.
Because density tells a different story. Costa Rica's sloth density is about 0.1 to 0.2 individuals per square kilometer. Brazil's is 0.03 to 0.05 per square kilometer. So per square kilometer, you're actually more likely to find a sloth in Costa Rica than in Brazil, sometimes four or five times more likely. It's just that Brazil is enormous. 3.3 million square kilometers of Amazon rainforest alone. Costa Rica is 51,000 square kilometers total. The math is brutal.
Brazil wins on square footage. It's the difference between a crowded apartment building and a sprawling ranch. The ranch has more people, but good luck bumping into them.
That's exactly the right way to think about it, and it explains the tourism reality. If you go to Manuel Antonio National Park in Costa Rica, you are almost guaranteed to see a sloth. Guides know the trees, they know the individuals. In the Brazilian Amazon, sloths are everywhere and nowhere. You might go a week without seeing one because the forest is so vast and the density is so low.
Let's talk about which sloths we're actually counting in Brazil, because it's not one big homogeneous population.
Brazil has three species. The most common is Bradypus variegatus, the brown-throated three-toed. That's the one with the widest range of any sloth species, from Honduras all the way down to central Brazil. Then you have Cholepus didactylus, Linnaeus's two-toed sloth, which ranges across the Amazon basin. And then the really interesting one, Bradypus torquatus, the maned three-toed sloth, which is endemic to the Atlantic forest of coastal Brazil and found nowhere else on Earth.
The maned sloth. How many of those are left?
About 1,000 individuals. The Atlantic forest has lost 85 to 90% of its original cover to agriculture and urbanization. It's been getting cleared since the Portuguese arrived in 1500. The maned sloth is hanging on in the remaining fragments, mostly in the states of Bahia, Espírito Santo, and Rio de Janeiro.
1,000 individuals. That's conservation triage territory.
It absolutely is. And what makes it worse is that they're genetically isolated from the Amazon populations. The two biomes are separated by the Cerrado, Brazil's vast tropical savanna, which sloths can't cross. So the Atlantic forest maned sloths are on their own evolutionary island. No rescue effect, no gene flow from the Amazon.
Brazil's big number, 100,000 plus, is not a safety net for the maned sloth. It's a completely separate conservation problem.
And that's one of the core points I want to land. Protecting sloths means protecting habitat connectivity, not just counting heads. 100,000 sloths in the Amazon doesn't help 1,000 maned sloths in the Atlantic forest if the two populations can never meet.
Now Costa Rica. What's their species lineup?
Costa Rica has two species, Bradypus variegatus, the same brown-throated three-toed found in Brazil, and Cholepus hoffmanni, Hoffman's two-toed sloth. So fewer species than Brazil, but much higher density per square kilometer. And Costa Rica has done something genuinely impressive since the 1990s. They've reversed deforestation. Forest cover dropped to about 21% in the late 80s, and now it's back above 50%. That reforestation has increased habitat connectivity, which is huge for sloths.
Though connectivity is relative when you're a sloth, and the gaps between forest patches are roads with power lines.
That's the dark side of Costa Rica's sloth story. Power line electrocution is the leading cause of death for sloths in the Sarapiquí region. A study by the Sloth Conservation Foundation found that something like 40% of sloth admissions to rescue centers were electrocution cases. They climb a power line thinking it's a branch, touch two lines at once, and that's it.
Costa Rica has higher density and better ecotourism infrastructure, which is why the brand is Costa Rican, but also a specific human-made mortality problem that Brazil's low-density Amazon populations don't face in the same way.
In the Brazilian Amazon, the biggest threats are deforestation and hunting. Indigenous communities in some regions do hunt sloths for food, which almost never happens in Costa Rica. In Costa Rica, the threats are roads, power lines, and dogs. Different problems, different conservation strategies.
Now you mention Colombia as the dark horse. What's the story there?
Colombia is the sloth diversity champion. It has five species, the highest of any country. Bradypus variegatus is widespread. Bradypus tridactylus. The pale-throated three-toed shows up in the far eastern Amazon near the borders with Venezuela and Brazil. Cholepus hoffmanni and Cholepus didactylus both occur. Plus, Colombia claims the range edge of Bradypus pygmaeus, the pygmy sloth, though that one's technically on an island that Panama administers.
Colombia is the mixing zone.
It's the biogeographic crossroads. Colombia sits at the intersection of Central and South America, with Pacific Coast, Caribbean Coast, Amazon Basin, and Andean Highlands, all in one country. That creates an extraordinary range of habitats, and sloths have sorted themselves across that landscape in ways that researchers are still mapping. The Choco region on the Pacific coast, for example, is one of the wettest places on Earth and has dense populations of Hoffman's two-toed sloths, but almost no three-toed sloths. Still an open question.
Let's move to the real puzzle. How do two-toed and three-toed sloths divide up the map? Because they coexist in a lot of places, but they're not just randomly distributed.
The density versus absolute numbers distinction is the key to understanding why Brazil wins the sloth count. Let's dig into the mechanisms. The core difference is diet and metabolism. Three-toed sloths. Bradypus are folivores. They eat almost exclusively leaves, and they're picky about which leaves. The brown-throated three-toed is particularly dependent on cecropia trees. Those are the fast-growing pioneer trees with big umbrella-shaped leaves and hollow stems. Three-toeds have a specialized multi-chambered stomach that ferments leaves like a ruminant, and their metabolism is extraordinarily slow. They descend from the canopy about once a week to defecate at the base of their preferred tree. That's basically their whole strategy.
Meanwhile, the two-toeds are more cosmopolitan in their dining habits.
Coloepus two-toed sloths are omnivorous. They'll eat leaves, sure, but also fruit, flowers, and there are documented cases of them eating small lizards and bird eggs. They have a more generalized digestive system, a slightly faster metabolism, though still glacial by mammal standards, and they move between trees more often. They also don't have the ritualized once-a-week bathroom trip. They'll defecate from the canopy.
One's a leaf specialist and the other's an opportunistic generalist, and that shapes where they can live.
Three-toed sloths are restricted to lowland tropical forests below about 1,500 meters because that's where their preferred tree species, especially Cecropia, are abundant. Two-toed sloths can tolerate higher elevations and drier forests. In Costa Rica, Hoffman's two-toed sloth is found up to 2,400 meters in the Monteverde cloud forest. The brown-throated three-toed is rarely seen above 1,200 meters.
That's a massive vertical gap. 1,200 meters of elevation where only one genus can hack it.
That's not just a Costa Rica thing. You see the same pattern across the Andes. In Ecuador, Choleopus hoffmani is found in the Andean foothills up to about 2,000 meters, while Bradypus variegatus sticks to the Amazonian lowlands below 1,000 meters. In Colombia, the elevational partitioning is even more pronounced because the Andes split into three cordilleras, creating a complex mosaic of valleys and highlands. Sloths essentially sort themselves by altitude.
Which means climate change could scramble that sorting pretty dramatically.
We'll get to that, but first, there's another layer to the range partitioning. Even where two-toed and three-toed sloths co-occur at the same elevation, they use different parts of the canopy. A 2021 telemetry study in Panama tracked 14 Hoffman's two-toed sloths and 18 brown-throated three-toed sloths in overlapping home ranges. The two-toeds favored ficus trees, figs, and spent more time in the middle and upper canopy. The three-toeds favored cecropia and spent more time in the upper canopy and emergent trees. Different tree species, different canopy strata. They're in the same forest, but not really competing for the same resources.
Like two neighbors who live on the same street but go to different grocery stores and different restaurants.
One of them only eats kale. The other one will eat anything.
That's the three-toed. I respect the commitment.
Specialization has a cost. Three-toed sloths are more vulnerable to habitat fragmentation precisely because they're so specialized. If a forest patch loses its cecropia trees, which can happen when the patch is too small and edge effects dry it out, the three-toeds have nowhere to go. Two-toeds can switch to secondary forest, plantations, even gardens. There are Hoffman's two-toed sloths living in cacao plantations in Costa Rica that have been there for generations, eating cacao pods and the leaves of shade trees.
When a forest gets fragmented, the two-toed might shrug and find a new tree, while the three-toed starves.
That's the grim summary, yes, and it's playing out across Central America. In heavily fragmented landscapes like the Panamanian Dry Arc, the region where the Central American isthmus narrows and forest cover is patchy, three-toed sloths have disappeared from many fragments where two-toed sloths persist.
Now what about the geographic weirdness? You mentioned a gap in the Amazon where one species just isn't there.
The Hoffman's Gap. This is one of my favorite biogeographic puzzles. Choleopus hoffmani. Hoffman's two-toed sloth ranges from Nicaragua down through Central America and into western Colombia, Ecuador, and the western edge of the Amazon. But there's a roughly 500-kilometer stretch of the central Amazon between the Rio Negro and the Rio Tapajos where it's completely absent. The habitat looks suitable. The climate is fine. But Hoffman's two-toed just isn't there. Instead, you find Cholepus didactylus, Linnaeus's two-toed, on the other side of the gap.
Two species of two-toed sloth, separated by an invisible line.
Researchers have competing hypotheses. One is competitive exclusion. Cholepus didactylus might be slightly better adapted to the central Amazon and prevents Cholepus hoffmanni from establishing. Another is that the rivers themselves act as dispersal barriers. The Rio Negro is enormous, and sloths are not strong swimmers. A third hypothesis is historical. During the Pleistocene, climate fluctuations might have created a forest refuge on one side of the gap and not the other, and the sloths simply haven't recolonized yet.
Haven't gotten around to it. I can relate.
The gap is real and persistent. A 2019 survey by Brazilian researchers spent 6 months doing transects in the supposed gap zone and didn't find a single Hoffman's two-toed. They did find Linnaeus's two-toed in abundance. So whatever is keeping them apart, it's effective.
Now let's talk about the weirdest sloth of all. The one that's basically a miniature version living on a speck of an island.
The pygmy three-toed sloth. Found only on Isla Escudo de Veraguas, a 4.3 square kilometer island off the Caribbean coast of Panama. It's a textbook case of insular dwarfism. Isolated on a small island with limited resources, the population evolved to be about 40% smaller than their mainland relatives. Adults weigh 2.5 to 3.5 kilograms, compared to 4 to 6 kilograms for mainland brown-throated sloths.
How many are left?
As of 2024, the estimated population is 79 individuals on one tiny island. And they're critically endangered. They occupy only about 1.5 square kilometers of the island's total area, mostly in mangrove forests along the coast.
79 individuals. That's not a population. That's a class reunion.
It's terrifyingly small, and the threats are compounding. The island has no permanent human settlement, but fishermen from the mainland visit seasonally and sometimes hunt sloths. Mangrove cutting for firewood degrades their habitat, and sea level rise, which we'll come back to, threatens to literally drown their remaining range.
The pygmy sloth is simultaneously the most geographically restricted mammal in the Americas and one of the most endangered. That's a rough combination.
It's the sloth equivalent of a canary in a coal mine. Except the coal mine is a 4-square-kilometer island, and the canary is a miniature leaf-eating specialist that can't swim to the mainland.
Now, let me bring in the personal angle. If I, Corn the Sloth, had to map my extended family across Latin America, what would that look like?
I've been waiting for this. So if we're being taxonomically honest, and I know you'll insist on this, your three-toed cousins, the Bradypus side of the family, would be concentrated in the lowland Amazon. Brazil, Peru, eastern Colombia, the Guianas. They're the leaf-eating purists, the ones who won't touch fruit, the slow metabolism traditionalists. Your two-toed cousins, the Cholepus side, would be in the Andean foothills of Ecuador, Colombia, and Venezuela, plus the drier Pacific slope forests of Costa Rica and Panama. They're the adaptable ones, the omnivores, the ones who figured out cacao plantations are perfectly good habitat.
The three-toed side is the Amazonian heartland family. The two-toed side is the mountain and coast diaspora.
The maned sloth, Bradypus torquatus, is the isolated branch that stayed on the Brazilian coast while the rest of the family spread across the continent. They're the cousins who didn't get the memo about the Amazon and just stayed in the Atlantic forest, which turned out to be a risky bet.
The pygmy sloth is, what, the eccentric uncle who moved to a tiny island and shrank?
The eccentric uncle who moved to a tiny island shrank and now has 78 neighbors and no exit strategy. And the Hoffman's gap sloths are the branch of the family that just didn't show up to a 500-kilometer stretch of perfectly good forest. Nobody knows why. They're not returning calls.
Of course they're not. They're sloths. Returning calls takes decades.
The biogeographic point here is that sloth distribution is not random and it's not uniform. It's shaped by diet, elevation, competition, and history. And understanding that is what lets you make sense of the map.
What does this mean for someone who wants to see sloths, or for someone who wants to protect them? The answer depends on where you are.
If you want to see sloths in the wild with the highest probability per visit, Costa Rica is still the best bet. The density is high, the ecotourism infrastructure is mature, and guides know exactly which trees to check. Manuel Antonio, Tortuguero, the Osa Peninsula, you're almost guaranteed sightings. If you want to see sloth diversity, Colombia is the destination. 5 species in one country, from the Amazon to the Andes to the Pacific coast. You could theoretically see a brown-throated three-toed, a pale-throated three-toed, a Hoffman's two-toed, a Linnaeus's two-toed, and, with a boat trip to Escudo de Veraguas, a pygmy sloth, all in one country. Good luck actually doing that, but the possibility exists.
Brazil is for the completist who wants to understand sloth biogeography in its full scale.
Brazil gives you the Amazonian heartland experience. Bradypus variegatus and Cholepus didactylus across millions of square kilometers, plus the Atlantic forest endemics. The Maine sloth is one of the rarest mammals on Earth, and seeing one in the wild, in the remaining forest fragments of Bahia or Espírito Santo, is special. But it's not easy. You need patience, local guides, and luck.
For conservation, the strategies have to be different in each country.
In Costa Rica, the proven intervention is canopy bridges. The Sloth Conservation Foundation has been installing them across roads in the Serrapeque region. And a 2024 study showed a 60% reduction in road mortality at sites with bridges. That's huge. 60% fewer sloths electrocuted or hit by cars. The bridges are relatively cheap, basically thick ropes strung between trees across roads, and they work.
The problem is connectivity at the micro scale, getting sloths across roads and power line corridors.
In Brazil, the scale is different. The Atlantic forest needs corridor restoration at the landscape level, reconnecting fragments that are kilometers apart. The Instituto de Pesquisas Ecológicas has been doing this in the Pontale do Paranapanema region of São Paulo State, planting forest corridors to connect isolated Atlantic forest remnants. That's a multi-decade project. You're not stringing a rope across a road, you're rebuilding entire forest ecosystems.
The maned sloth needs both, habitat protection in the fragments that remain, plus connectivity between them. Otherwise, you get inbreeding depression and local extinctions.
Genetic studies of man sloth populations in different Atlantic forest fragments show they're already diverging. A 2022 paper found significant genetic differentiation between populations separated by as little as 50 kilometers of agricultural land. That's the early warning sign of a species fragmenting into non-viable subpopulations.
In Colombia, the conservation challenge is different again.
Colombia's challenge is that its sloth diversity is spread across regions with very different conservation pressures. The Amazonian populations face deforestation for cattle ranching and coca cultivation. The Chaco populations face gold mining and habitat degradation. The Andean populations face fragmentation from agriculture and roads. There's no single Colombian sloth conservation strategy. It has to be regional.
Which brings us to the big open question, one that climate change is making urgent.
As temperatures rise, vegetation zones shift upward. Tree species that three-toed sloths depend on, especially Cecropia, will move upslope to track their preferred temperature range. But three-toed sloths are restricted to lowland forests for reasons we don't fully understand. It might be their slow metabolism can't handle cooler temperatures at higher elevations. It might be that their gut microbiome, which is specialized for fermenting specific leaves, doesn't work as well with montane vegetation. Whatever the mechanism, if Cecropia moves uphill and three-toed sloths can't follow, they get squeezed between rising temperatures and mountaintops.
The elevational vise.
That's a particular risk in Costa Rica and Panama, where mountains rise sharply from the lowlands. There's not a lot of room for gradual range shifts. In the Amazon basin, the topography is flatter, so species can theoretically shift southward or westward as conditions change. But the Central American isthmus is narrow, and the mountains are steep. A sloth at 1,200 meters in Costa Rica doesn't have a lot of upslope options before it hits the top of the Talamanca Range.
The pygmy sloth has even fewer options.
The pygmy sloth is trapped. Sea level rise projections for the Caribbean suggest a 0.5-meter rise would flood about 30% of Escudo de Veraguas. The mangrove forests where the pygmy sloths live are right at sea level. A 1-meter rise, which is within the range of projections for the end of this century, could submerge most of their habitat, and they can't evacuate to the mainland. They can't swim that far. They can't climb to higher ground because the island's interior is dense, dry forest that they're not adapted to.
79 individuals, one island, and the ocean rising. That's not a conservation problem. That's a countdown.
There have been discussions about a captive breeding program or even translocation to another island, but both are enormously complicated. Pygmy sloths have a specialized diet, a specialized gut microbiome, and extreme sensitivity to stress. Moving them could kill them. Not moving them might doom them. It's a genuine ethical and logistical dilemma.
The sloth's range is not just a map. It's a story of evolutionary specialization, habitat history, and human intervention. Understanding where sloths live is the first step to understanding how they survive, and whether they'll keep surviving.
That's what I want people to take away. When you see a sloth in Costa Rica, you're seeing one node in a continent spanning biogeographic story. The same species you're photographing in Manuel Antonio has cousins in the Brazilian Amazon, isolated relatives in the Atlantic forest, and a miniature counterpart clinging to a vanishing island off Panama. The map of where sloths live is a map of 40 million years of evolution, written across two continents and 15 countries.
My family, scattered across all of it, slowly returning calls. Now Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the early 1500s, Korean Hasipsio-Che speech level, the highest formal honorific, required adding the infix saop between the verb stem and its ending, a construction so elaborate that a single sentence of apology could run 30 syllables. By comparison, the modern Equatorial Guinean Fang language encodes equivalent deference with a single tonal shift on the second syllable of a kinship term, compressing what once took multiple morphemes into a pitch change imperceptible to non-native speakers. The Hasipsio-Che Sapi infix has no surviving equivalent in any modern Korean register.
Right. This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for somehow finding facts that make me feel both overeducated and completely lost. If you want to support sloth conservation, check out the Sloth Conservation Foundation's Canopy Bridge projects in Costa Rica, or the Instituto de Pesquisas Ecologicas Forest Corridor work in Brazil. And if you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps.
Find us at myweirdprompts.com. I'm Herman Poppleberry.
I'm Korn. We'll be here.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from long-eared host. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.